welcome to you, Julia Heiss, social and anthropologist and education planner, chief of section for education for sustainable development with UNESCO.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
We are very happy to have you here on our Climate for Education talks. This is our first episode of this season. And yeah, again, just thank you very much for wanting to join.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Let's just dive into it. Why does a role like yours exist? As in, what are the needs out there that your work and UNESCO, your team, that you're trying to address?
Yeah, thank you very much for the question. Maybe I start a little bit with, you know, education for sustainable development, why I think it's also an exciting area of work, how I got to get, you know, start working on it, and what I find appealing. I think the starting point really was to realize that education systems have contributed to unsustainable development, and therefore the question is what needs to be changed in our education systems to revert that process, and how to contribute now to more sustainable living lifestyles development. So the very purpose of education, education for what, is what that movement really asked. And then consequently also, what kind of education do we need to develop the knowledge and skills and the attitude that fulfill, that should fulfill that purpose and to lead to more sustainable lifestyles, for example. So back in the times of the Millennium Development Goals, the focus was still very much on access, getting learners into classrooms, making sure that they had the basic and the foundational skills. And of course, that's essential, and that's still not achieved in many places, and has to, that effort has to continue. But over time, it also became clear that access alone wouldn't be enough. What really is important is to see what learners are learning and how this connects to the world in the way they are living, especially with growing challenges, particularly climate change and everything that is related to it. So the conversation started to shift, you know, away from just access and towards more quality, relevance, purpose. And I think one could say that ESD really contributed to that debate, was very much at the forefront at the time. And now that debate, that was more of a debate of a particular community of practice, moved now to the center and asked these deeper questions that we are asking ourselves. What kind of knowledge and skills do young people need to navigate uncertain futures? How to equip them with the values and the competences, the critical thinking, what teachers, what they need to have to learn? So that, I think, was really what I find appealing and found appealing at the time I started working on ESD, which is a long time ago. I work both here in headquarters and in Paris, and then also in Africa, where all these questions sort of resonate in another way again. So, for example, if you start education work in Southern Africa, where I was posted for a couple of years recently, it becomes clear that education, to be truly transformative, it has to draw from local systems, from indigenous practices, from community traditions, and be grounded in those realities. Otherwise, it risks to become what it has been, namely a legacy of post-colonial, of colonial education systems. So, what is our role? That's a good question. I'm asking myself sometimes, and then also with colleagues, we are reflecting on that. I think my role and the role of the Section for Education for Sustainable Development exists because UNESCO believes that education is a powerful tool to address global challenges, climate change becoming more in the forefront as one of the major sustainability challenges, of course. And UNESCO plays a central role in it advances ESD through global frameworks. It started with the UN decade in 2005. We are now operating within the global program, which is called ESD for 2030. And these frameworks help, hopefully, countries to align their national policies, their curricula, their education systems with what we are proposing. So we are proposing the concepts, the language, the standards, the monitoring frameworks that countries can then adapt to their specific realities. But we are not only proposing standards and framework, we also directly advise governments on curricula reforms and how to get greening, ESD, climate change into that in a meaningful, context-specific manner, on using the appropriate pedagogies and tools. One tool to mention is the recently published greening curriculum guidance, which was developed by the Greening Education Partnership. And that's really an excellent tool of standard setting. We also run teacher training, we support school leaders, we work with communities to implement what we like to call a whole school approach, a whole system approach. That means that schools don't only integrate climate change, for instance, as a subject, but they also look at school governance, how facilities and operations are functioning in a more sustainable manner, as well as community engagement. There again, we have another guiding document that was recently developed, which is the Green School Quality Standards, also developed under the Greening Education Partnership. So we are trying to ensure that the bigger picture goals, the sustainable development goals, are translated into transformative learning experiences on the ground, in the classrooms, and in the communities.
And thank you. And these resources, maybe you can give me the links, and I'll share them as well in the text.
Absolutely.
So yeah, the listeners can check it out. What are some of the key ingredients of a school environment that supports transformative learning for climate education, for instance?
So I think transformative learning does not just happen by adding climate change into the curriculum or even just into the science class. It takes a whole ecosystem that has to work together. So sustainability should live transversal. It can be introduced in arts education, in social studies, beyond the classroom with extracurricular activities, school events, community projects, for example. So it needs a strong school leadership, so leaders that are not just administrators, but that who are championing sustainability along the lines of this whole institutional approach that I described at the beginning. They should set the tone, the school culture, the vision. It, of course, is very much on the shoulders, as always, of teachers. Teachers have to be empowered. They must feel trusted. They have to have the autonomy to use and trial innovative pedagogies. They have to have the training and professional support. You can't expect them to lead climate change education without any professional training and tools and understanding. And then as a fourth area, I would say really that whole school institution community approach. We are talking so much about it, but that's really the only way to convince, to showcase, and to develop that culture of sustainability. So really learning institutions that act as champions for sustainability. And you have also asked what challenges. I mean, there are many, of course, but maybe just two. First of all, the change is difficult and hard. And in that reform of education and how schools and education communities should function requires major change. So that is hard. But once you convince teachers and school leaders that it is for the good of the kids themselves and make education more relevant and interesting, you usually have them on board. I also, again, having that experience from headquarters and in the field, I think that balance often is difficult to stay local relevant and to work on tools and on frameworks that are globally interesting. So we have that working at the global level, as I'm doing at the beginning.
All right. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, because that was what I was just thinking as well. Like some of these frameworks, they can be quite heavy and huge and very high up on this huge international scale and maybe for a little local school in Denmark or Slovenia, that can seem that maybe a framework like that can seem very far away or a sort of out of reach. What can schools, decision makers at little local schools and institutions who want to get started, to turn or transition their institution towards a greener path or sustainability, how can they get started?
Yeah, good question. I think one thing that carries such projects, because you know they are like everything in education, it's long term, but especially if you want to lead a whole school towards sustainable practices, sustainable teaching, sustainability culture. I think you need to make sure that you form a community of practice. So one teacher alone usually is not successful in that big endeavor. You need to make sure that he or she is supported, first of all, by the leadership of the school, and secondly, ideally also by other teachers. And then that community can grow. And we have seen through projects that we have accompanied incredible changes. You know, often these initiatives start small with a waste management project in a school, just carried by a teacher and a student, let's say. And then if they get that support, they can grow fast and they change the canteen practices and they change the behavioral rules in entire schools. And therefore, you know, through, as I said before, through living and practicing sustainability as an institution, you also, the learning of sustainable development becomes much more concrete and clear to students and convincing.
Before, you mentioned teacher training and empowering educators. That's one of our Education for Climate communities. That's one of its biggest priorities for this year is training teachers and empowering teachers specifically. What can you say about how do you empower your teachers? How do you train your teachers?
Yeah, I think, I mean, often teachers shy away from topics such as climate change because they seem to be so technical and so complex and so big, and the way we are promoting them even more so, because as we said before, we don't want them to be a mere teaching of the greenhouse effect or the science of climate change. We would like to open it to other subject areas, have discussions on climate justice, have discussion on post-carbon societies, for example. And of course, that's a lot to ask from a teacher. So first of all, a teacher clearly has to receive training, ideally in-service and pre-service training, so before becoming a teacher and then throughout as well. Secondly, I think something that many teachers already adopted, I think it really, a teacher can do that when he sees him or herself as a facilitator of learning. So it's just, a teacher doesn't have to know everything. We have so many sources of knowledge nowadays. A teacher can learn with the students, also try to find resources within the communities or it could be museums and other resources out of the school. And I think quite often it is not just the technical knowledge, which, as I said, is not really, we don't expect can't expect any teacher to be a climate scientist, but it's very often linked to motivation and confidence. So if a teacher is a confident teacher, knows how to apply different pedagogies, knows how to play that role of a learning facilitator rather than somebody who, you know, teaches upfront and thinks that he or she has to know everything, then I think that model works quite well. And that can, of course, be convened through teacher education, for example.
Do you have some cases that you can think of where you mentioned earlier that you've seen some schools completely transform? Is there any specific case you remember or something that stands out about some of these schools that you worked with. What was it before, and what did it become?
Yes, many. So, for example, there's a school I remember in Zimbabwe that won a couple of years ago already our prize. We have an ESD Japan prize for excellent examples of projects on education for sustainable development. And that school that is situated in a very, very poor and semi-arid area started developing agricultural school garden projects, let's say, which then really turned into big agricultural areas. I think the first incentive was that they had they wanted to do that for school feeding because, as I said, it was situated in a poor, arid, very marginalized community of Zimbabwe. And it was led by a teacher and a school principal, joining others then as a whole community and the surrounding community. So this school developed into a whole oasis and a little business itself. It managed not only to feed its own school community, but to produce vegetables even for the local market, and shared their experience with many other schools in the country and beyond. As a prize winner, the advantage is also that we provide the platforms where they could share their beautiful example with the global community of practice.
Okay, wow. Okay, really cool. You work with Green Education Partnership. Can you tell us a bit about these university partnerships and how it works?
Yeah, sure. So the Greening Education Partnership is an exciting project that was founded just after the Transformative Education Summit in 2022. So it's a very new, young initiative and has since then already managed to mobilize 97 countries, 1,007 members, which is quite remarkable and also highlights both the strong interest and the clear need for such platforms. Under the partnership, which is sort of structured around four pillars, school teachers, school environments, curriculum, and then the community, we have developed these standard setting tools I just mentioned. So one guidance tool for curriculum, one for developing a green school. So we call them green school standards. And upcoming resources also on guidance tools for greening communities and for greening teachers and teacher training and education systems. So that should help how to systematically integrate climate literacy and sustainability across both the curriculum and teacher training. You've mentioned universities. So it's a partnership of many actors in the area of ESD and climate change education, including UN agencies, NGOs, countries, as I just said. Universities are parts of it, but that's not the only group. We do have a network of universities, which is called the UNESCO UniTwin Network, with so-called UNESCO chairs. And they really help us in many things, including the Greening Education Partnership. They design cutting-edge curriculum contents. They conduct research on what works, what doesn't work in our education work. They deliver teacher education, of course. They produce sustainability scientists. So we very much work with especially those university chairs. We just developed a course together with UNITA, which is another UN agency, that helps us to develop leadership in sustainable development at university level, including the rectors of universities, but also the technical staff and the program directors, to make sure that they have sustainable development thinking in their courses. And the courses, you know, are again across all the subject areas. So that's how we work with universities, and the Greening Education Partnership includes those university networks and chairs as well. Maybe just one word again on networking. So that's very much part of the business, our business here, especially globally. As I said, I think community of practices and networks are extremely important to take sustainable development education and climate change education forward. So at the global level, we have the Greening Education Partnership, for which we are hosting the secretariat. We have ESDNet, which is a network for our global program. And we sort of facilitate this network through webinars, meetings, co-creating of resources and learning from one and another. At the school level, as I said, it's also really important to start off with such a community of practice if you want to get something going, because since the effort has to get out of the classroom, you know, it's good if a teacher can compellingly teach climate change and sustainable development, but if you want that whole institution, whole school approach, it has to get we have to get a step further. And that's why, again, networking, community of practice building, I think, is very, very central.
So what I'm hearing you say is, if you are working at a school or in a school environment, school institution, and you want to get started, you know, with something like this, you should start with perhaps rallying some colleagues and students or people from your community and start to make them inclined to join this quest.
Exactly.
Maybe find resources to present to them why it's important and how it can help students in different ways and the community as well.
We do have a number of, I think, very nice resources that show how such a school, a whole school approach can start. It's almost like a Lego, you know, building blocks that you can use. You start with something and then you connect it with something else. But as you said, I think the starting point is really to team up with others and decide on starting a project.
Okay. So maybe an advice to decision makers out there or people who are burning for a green cause, they should start with, perhaps they could start looking at a resource like that. Where to begin?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. I'll get that resource from you and I'll post it in the text. Okay. Well, Julia, I think we've covered my few questions. It was really a pleasure to have you here. All the best.
Thank you very much. Thanks a lot for the discussion. Mm-hmm.